It's time for Windows Weekly. Paul Thurrott's here. Mary Jo Foley's here. So is an update to Redstone 5. We'll talk about the new features and one feature that's gone missing, data lakes, Hadoop, and the future of Intel also on the agenda. It's all coming up next on Windows Weekly.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Windows Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley, episode 576, recorded Wednesday, June 27th, 2018. 1803 Curious. Windows Weekly is brought to you by ExpressVPN. Take back your internet privacy today for 3 months free with a one-year package. Go to expressvpn.com/windows. And by LastPass. Join over 33,000 businesses and start managing and securing your company's passwords today. Learn more at lastpass.com/twit. It's time for Windows Weekly, the show where we cover the latest news from Microsoft. Paul Thurrott's here from Thurrott.com. Mary Jo Foley from ZDNet.com. And the news looms large on this Wednesday. The large looming news.
Until about 11 minutes ago, yes. Mary Jo and I were complaining that literally nothing has happened the entire week.
I know. Yeah. I'm like, what are we going to talk about today? Like, there's nothing to talk about.
We were talking about maybe doing a little finger puppet show, some kind of a community theater production. But and then Microsoft released a new build.
And this is a big one, Elizabeth. I'm coming. I'm coming, Elizabeth.
Well, don't you feel like, Mary Jo, like every version of Windows 10, there is one the one build that is kind of humongous. And this kind of feels like that.
This does feel like that. Mm-hmm. It came out at 1 p.m., so just before the show started today.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I'm still kind of dissecting all the parts of this announcement.
I know. I'm going to have to bring up the blog post just to go through it. It's just too much stuff.
Yeah. So I think to me, looking through, this is build 17704 of Redstone 5 that came out. Mm-hmm. And the biggest thing to me is sets is out of this build. And that kind of jibes with what I had been hearing, which is sets probably is not going to be in Redstone 5.
See, I'm still kind of blown away by that. And I'm looking at the language they use, and they leave it open that it might come back. It will come back. I mean, they intend to have sets be a thing.
Yeah.
But all it says is in a future Windows Insider preview flight or build.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean RS5.
Nope.
Right? That could be RS6 or whatever they're going to call it.
I feel like at build, Joe B. kind of tipped the hand on this by saying, when is it going to be out? When it's ready to be out, instead of saying, well, probably Redstone 5. And I know your whole theory about like they got burned by doing that before, but I keep hearing sets is not going to be in Redstone 5. Hearing it pretty consistently.
You said this when we were at build.
Yep.
And my reaction to that was I didn't really get that from that conversation. Yeah. I feel like he was kind of backpedaling because in the past they've come under fire for promising things and then not delivering them by certain unnamed individuals who are particularly critical of them when they lie and exaggerate, whoever
who
that person
that
might be. but I don't remember the exact time frame of this, but I talked to Terry, I thought it was this year before he left, obviously. And I seem to recall him saying at the time he still thought it was going to make it. And he was talking about the last version of Windows 10 at the time.
In a way, I also don't think it's going to make it in this one. Not everybody is still testing it yet, right? Like only a subset of people have it. And so, you know, we're not down to like it's almost RTM time yet because Redstone 5 isn't going to RTM until September. But we're, they're in their bug bash right now. And so that means they're getting close to finalizing the major features of the build.
Yeah. There's a feature complete thing that has to happen.
Yeah.
Sometime in the next 60 days-ish or whatever. I'm
I don't think they're going to make
it. I'm surprised by this. I thought And it's really funny because there's no opinion to be had online that can't be contradicted by half the planet these days. But, you know, someone on Twitter had made the comment like, oh, you know, when he found out Sets was gone, he said, good, this thing wasn't ready anyway. And I thought to myself, well, that's interesting because I look at Sets today in RS5 and the builds we had to date. And I thought, you know, this thing looks pretty good. It's actually, it's not as awkward looking and it's not as mm-hmm. awkward to use as it was when they first tried to do it in RS4.
Yeah.
And maybe there's a clue in this little note they have because she said, Donna Sakaris, who wrote this, says some of the things we're focusing on for the future for Sets includes improvements to the visual design, which is something I thought looked good, and continuing to better integrate Office and Microsoft Edge into Sets to enhance workflow. Mm. I wonder if they're, I wonder if that's not the key. Like they're afraid that they don't have that core experience with their own stuff, right? That if it doesn't work A1, because it's a Windows feature, you can't screw around with it 3 months later. It's either going to go in there or it's not, and then it's going to stay like that for 6 months.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it has to be really good when it ships finally, especially with their own apps, right? If you like, if I try this and it's not good with Office or Edge, I'd just be like, oh, I don't really need to use Sets. I can use Groupie from Starduck.
Yeah, I Groupie is interesting because they did it first, but Groupie and or Starduck doesn't have the same level of sophistication they need to rise to that Microsoft does, and so it works. It's there now. It's if you do want tabs, it's there. But there's something about that product where you know you're kind of dragging stuff around. Mm-hmm. You're just moving a window around, and it wants to latch on to the window behind it. And I found myself misattaching tabs a lot with it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Anyway, I thought that was a big thing in this one. And also, the other big thing is blocking autoplay videos is actually in this one. That was the last build. That was a false alarm. They had it in the notes, and then they were like, "Oops, it's not actually here." But it is here now.
Yeah, and it looks like it works exactly the way it would want it to.
Yeah. Yep. Yay.
But the list this time is so humongous. And
it is. But a lot of these things, a lot of them, though, are things. Do you care about them?
No, like the Font Maker app or whatever. Yeah. And no, I don't care about that. But you know what? Every build I look and I say, okay, where's the nonsense? You know, where's the nonsense? And if you look at this stuff, it doesn't matter if it's relevant to me or not. I would say that none of this looks like nonsense unless I've missed something. I mean, it's all productivity focused features. Mm-hmm. You know, Skype for Windows 10 gets a big update, even goofy little things like the icon for PDF mm-hmm. files no longer looking like an Edge icon, which I actually think is a fairly big deal. It's all good. It's all good stuff on that level.
Yeah.
The thing that really kind of resonated with me the most, and this is kind of interesting, and I'm going to look into this a little more deeply, is they have the new diagnostic data mm-hmm. viewer in this build for the first time. I guess you have to get it from the store. I haven't installed it yet, but there's a note at the end of this huge section about this part of the this app or whatever, and it's very Apple-like. In fact, if you read this and you kind of changed the words around, you would think this came from Apple. It said, you know, our promise to upholding the highest standards of privacy will continue to be a top concern, which is, I don't think, something anyone would have accused Microsoft of, to be honest. In fact, it seems like with every version of Windows 10, they've kind of gone kicking and screaming into making more privacy features available, right? Mm-hmm. Right. But if you read this little, we don't have to read it out loud, but if you read the couple of paragraphs that she wrote there, it reads very much like that Apple focus. Mm. On privacy, you know, like, and it seems to me that they might be trying to pivot a little bit here. And maybe this is a post Terry thing for all I know. I don't know if Terry was the blocker on the privacy stuff before, but like I said, they really tried hard not to be transparent with that stuff. Maybe this is a big change. Maybe this is a big focus.
I think it's just, they keep getting they just can't get past people criticizing them for the privacy stuff, right? And so I think every build, they're like,
nothing substantive.
I know. So that's why you see them every build. It's like, okay, what if we add this? What if we do this? And you know, the biggest critics are like, we just want you to let us shut off telemetry, which is what they're not going to do. But they keep trying. You know, they keep trying to say, okay, look, we're getting better.
But you know what? I wonder about that turning it off thing, because once there are enough people using Windows 10, right? And there are roughly 700 million today, you know, so it's several hundred millions, whatever the number is. If you allow power users to go in and flip a switch and actually turn it off, or mostly turn it off, or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. It's really only a tiny portion of the population that's going to do that. At some point, you have enough, you know, telemetry feedback that it's not getting skewed. Mm-hmm. It may be something they can do, you know, just by volume.
I mean, they can do it, right? Like, don't they do it in – they let you do it in enterprise.
Yeah.
So you can. I think I think the reason they wouldn't do what you're suggesting is because they want the feedback to come from a wide spectrum of types of customers, right? So you're right. Like, most normal people wouldn't turn it off, but they want power users' feedback and telemetry also, right? So if they let power users do it, I think you're right. Everybody would shut it off. And then they'd be like, okay, now we have no data from that group.
Yeah, I guess the more cynical way of looking at this little testament to privacy is that if you read it carefully, it literally doesn't say, you know, what it says is it's your data and you have the device to know, you have the power to know what we're doing with it, essentially. Yeah. In other words, we're using it. We're still using this data.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But we're going to be more transparent about how it's used.
And isn't the only, I just skimmed this so far, but isn't the only new feature in the diagnostic viewer about what you basically problem reports and how crashes are identified? It's not about privacy, really, right?
Well, but there's a privacy element to any crash report because it's sending information about your computer to Microsoft.
Yeah. But it's a fairly small addition. Like, all the other verbiage around this is, well, here's what we already have said and done, and here's our commitment to you, right?
Right. In other words, right. So I'm sorry. This the tool itself isn't brand new. You have to go get it from the store. It is for people who care to understand what's happening. Right. The thing that struck me was that little, our commitment piece at the end. Yeah. They went into a little privacy spiel, which, like I said, kind of reminded me of an Apple type thing. And and just looking at the way they do this, or the way this is worded, it makes me wonder if this isn't going to be a primary focus of this release when they deliver it to the public. You know, they're going to promote this as, you're going to want this because it doesn't really, but it offers better privacy.
Yeah.
You know, or so something to that effect.
Yeah. You know, that's a really interesting point you're bringing up. Like, so when Redstone 5 comes out this fall, what are the three things they're going to say? These are the reasons you really want Redstone 5, right? And so if sets isn't in there.
I know. I was going to say, they just removed the one. You know, timeline was kind of the big one.
Cloud clipboard, is that in now or not yet officially in? I'm kind of losing track.
No, right. As you should be losing track because it's impossible to keep track of this stuff. I mean, that your phone thing that they talked about in build has not happened either. Although, you know, in the same sense with sets, I think the way they couched it was everything we're talking about today, you know, we're working on it. But, you know, here we are, what is it, the end of June and roughly not quite 2 months later, a month and a half later. There's been nothing on that yet.
You know, speaking of that, your phone thing, today I was setting up OneDrive on the HP Envy, which I hadn't done yet. I thought I had done it, but I hadn't, in terms of what syncs. And one of the categories was your phone on it.
Really?
Yeah.
Not like Paul's
there's a checkbox.
Yeah, Paul's phone. Paul's really?
Your phone.
There was a checkbox that said, do you want to sync your phone files across your devices? And I'm like, I didn't think that was in there.
If you check that, all it does is send you a text, right, saying, here's how you install OneDrive on your phone.
Oh, so it's not actually doing something.
That's an ad. Phone. I bet you that's an ad. Check it and see.
I think that's probably.
They've done it in other. Right. Yeah.
Okay, because I saw that for the first time, and I'm like, wait, I didn't think that feature was enabled yet, even though they talked about it at Build. I thought we were still kind of waiting.
When Microsoft Edge comes up, when you install a new build or get a new Windows 10 version, it offers to put it on your phone as well, and it sends you a text.
Right.
Yeah,
he's probably
right. And I have that. I have it on my phone, and I have it on the PC.
Mm-hmm.
It sort of half works in terms of making the phone connect with the PC.
That's going to be on the movie poster for this feature. It sort of half works. Mary Jo Foley, ZDNet.
No, so when I get a text message on my Android phone, it sends me a note on the Windows 10 PC and says, here's the note somebody just sent you. But then if I try to reply back from the PC to the phone, it won't do it. It acts like it's doing it, but it doesn't do it. Like, oh, it doesn't actually work. It pretends it's doing. So right. Yeah.
So let me see. I'm gonna.
There's
see
also
else.
Security what? In today's build. Did you see? There's a security subhead here.
Security and privacy are a good message, but that's a tough end user thing because there's nothing really. It's not a feat. I mean, it's important, but.
Right. It's really a new setting in today's build called Block Suspicious Behaviors, which brings our Windows Defender Exploit Guard attack surface reduction technology to all users.
Okay.
Oh, sounds God. Good.
Sorry. Yeah. This is unrelated to what we're talking about, but almond milk is the worst. And when my daughter gets home, I might have to leave to go kill her.
I love almond milk.
How did that come up? Wait a minute.
I'm drinking iced coffee.
Oh, she put almond
my
milk
daughter
in your coffee.
Drank the rest of the milk.
Oh, yeah.
But the only thing that's left is almond milk. The only person who drinks it is my daughter. So she drank the regular milk. And now I'm stuck with the almond. I know this is possibly the ultimate white guy first world problem.
Almond milk is mostly just water. You know that, right?
It's disgusting.
It tastes good, though.
It's good by itself. I wouldn't put it in. Soy milk's okay.
I like
in
it
coffee.
In coffee. I
looked for soy milk. That's the type of thing. My daughter's a vegetarian. She has all kinds of crazy stuff in the refrigerator. But
almond milk is more popular than soy milk. And I think it was really the almond growers of California who spread the news that soy milk grows breasts on men. And that is why almond milk has passed soy milk.
That could be true. Oh, jeez.
Well, yeah.
No, I mean, yeah. I mean, the theory Leo has that
yeah, because I don't think soy milk is bad for you.
No, but too much soy is bad for you.
Yeah, but you'd have to. That's a lot of soy.
That's a lot of soy. It is. Yeah.
And almond milk is mostly just water.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's that part that isn't water that tastes gross.
Yeah, exactly. If you just put water in your coffee, it would taste better.
Here's some crushed almonds. Let me put them in your coffee.
Yeah. No, I'm with you.
You know?
I like almonds. I love almonds.
I do too.
Yeah. Almond milk doesn't taste bad. Fantastic. But you're right. There's something about it in coffee.
It really ruins this.
It gives it a weird, yeah.
Oh, come on, guys.
Soy milk's okay.
Soy milk is good.
Yeah. I don't have any soy milk.
You drink, you're not anti-milk, are you?
No, I drink all kinds of milk.
Yeah, you just don't
any
eat meat.
Milk.
Yeah. But milk that, you know, the cow kills it voluntarily. Sort of, relatively.
How do they milk the little almonds?
If you, it's not easy. It's a different matter entirely. The cow wants to be milked. The almond needs to
the
be
almond
persuaded.
Just goes down fighting.
Almonds don't want to be milked.
They do not want to be milked.
Yep.
All right.
You guys should make your own almond milk. I'm just going to say.
Oh, that would be better.
Good.
All right. So I apologize for sidetracking this.
But, I was in China in a small town, and they were making soy milk. Yeah. And I was so disgusted by the process. I didn't drink soy milk for – you know what they put in soy milk? They put weird stuff in it, like lye or something. It's weird. Or
to
ash.
Make it coagulate.
They put ash in it. Extract the stuff from it or whatever.
Yeah. It's not pleasant.
It's involved to make soy milk.
It's a lot harder to make soy milk or almond milk than one might think.
I assumed it was just a crushing process.
I thought so too, but it's not.
No.
Mary Jo's made her own.
We did in cooking school. Yep.
She knows. What did you add to make it coagulate?
Yeah, what is the thing you add? I'm looking for it.
Something alkaline, probably.
Yeah, it is.
Because I think they used ash.
Something you put in it to make it like coagulate, right?
Yeah. Or yeah.
Like a weed killer of some kind,
Soy milk recipe.
I know. That's what I'm looking at right now.
Strain the blended mixture in a nut milk bag. Okay, I'm done now.
You know, your own nut milk bag.
Yeah, nut milk bag, right? I remember the beer thing you did.
The sock, beer sock.
Beer sock.
That kind of went down in infamy.
Looks like, the infamous beer sock. It looks like you don't have to put something weird in it.
No, but people do.
It's just for the mass, you know, construction of soy milk. So how's Windows these days?
Yes. So at some point earlier, to my side road there, I looked at something. I'd gone through the previous builds to pull out what the new features were and kind of line them up in what I thought were the most important things first. So that was number one. Yep. Cross-device support for Timeline was number two. And your phone was number three. And then beyond that, it was the new clipboard experience, which is what you're talking, what you were talking about. There's a new screenshot tool, search previews, which are actually kind of interesting, by the way. The dark theme for File Explorer. And then, you know, you get improvements kind of across the board. More Fluent, more Cortana, more Edge.
Game Bar.
Of course. You know, Game Bar probably is in there somewhere. Focus Assist improvements, you know, Microsoft or Windows Security, rather. Yeah. So, but big bucket stuff, you know, end user features. Mm. We're not really talking about a bunch of stuff here, are we? You know, it's only a few things.
I think Redstone 4, you know, 1803 had even fewer features, right? In terms of major features. It had timeline.
Yeah. I mean, I would, in some ways they were analogous, but that only assumes that sets happens. If sets doesn't happen, yeah, this is even more minor of a release, but pretty, you know, I'm not going to complain about this. I should be clear. I don't mean this as a complaint. I think the number of features, especially superfluous features that they've added in previous releases, was too much.
If they focus on fixing stuff, right? We fixed a bunch of stuff and we added some small convenience things, that would be good. Sure. That would be a good build, actually.
Yep. Yeah. And minor productivity features are always appreciated.
Yep.
Yeah.
You can, somebody called the radio show and said, oh, I'm really upset because I couldn't get 1803, but I do get it. I have a green checkbox next to you're updated. And right. I explained, and I think I did this correctly, that 1803 is a feature update, but you are secure because you got all the critical updates.
That's right. That's right. Mm-hmm.
And that's
every patch Tuesday. You still get
all the other stuff. Right.
Doesn't matter which version you're on. Yeah. As long as it's currently supported.
So when we're talking about Redstone 5, that's a feature update. Mm-hmm.
That's right.
It is. Yep.
And critical, you know, important fixes and security patches would not necessarily, they would be shipped on literally.
Yeah, they would be shipped on each supported version of Windows 10.
Right. Yeah. So really, anything like Redstone 5 should be an update in visible features, right? Or I guess sometimes they might do something more elaborate.
You
know,
this is one of those great debates over the history of Windows, right? Because you could look at big releases, Windows 95, Windows 98. You could look at minor releases like those OSR releases for Windows 95, where to the typical consumer, if they were confronted by either desktop, they probably wouldn't have noticed too much. Mm-hmm. You know, some versions are big, some versions are a little, you know, some versions that had numbers like 3.1 were huge, and some, you know, some that had 4.0s or whatever were not big. I mean, it kind of goes up and down. But I think the issue today is, you know, Windows is a mature product. The majority of personal computing has kind of moved along to mobile and web. And that really, we don't need big bang updates here anymore. And I think if you look at what this previous update, 1803, this coming update, RS5, what they look like, what Apple has done with the Mac over the past maybe even several releases of Mac OS is correct for where these things are in their life cycle.
Which is mature.
Mm-hmm. Mature and golden not in years. Major. Well, you know, it's Portugal, Leo. It's
we haven't had any new people here since the Goths.
Yep. Remember that earthquake that destroyed the city?
1522. Okay. So that's why it's appropriate to talk about kind of new features when you're talking about Redstone 5.
Because it is a feature
update. It's a feature update.
Yeah.
That's right. Yeah. Well, look, I mean, Edge is still going to be improved in dramatic ways, or fairly dramatic ways. You know, Cortana is going to get a bunch of updates. You know, they'll find a way. It's always interesting and sometimes amusing to me how Microsoft promotes these things. I mean, you know, remember before Build, we were talking about whether or not or how they would approach Windows 10, given the then recent things that had happened with the organization. And I think we had both agreed ahead of time that they were going to, you know, they would promote it like an ongoing kind of concern, like this is still a big deal, blah, 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 whatever. But on the other hand, then they came out and talked about Microsoft 365, and they talked about a bunch of stuff that had nothing to do with each other as if it were part of some concerted, you know, all hands effort, when in fact these things were all discrete little, in some cases, very little things.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Oh, and Skype for Windows 10 got a big update as part of today's.
Oh, that always makes me nervous.
Me too.
but that's a good version again. So to be clear, this is Skype for Windows 10. So this is the universal app. This is the thing that comes in box, with Windows 10. It is the future of Skype, I guess, on the desktop. They're not promoting or updating the desktop app anymore. So anything they can do to make that work right is a positive. I mean, I still don't like the single window thing. Mm-mm. And I haven't installed Spill yet, but it does get better and better. And it's only a matter of time before I don't know what you're using right now, Mary Jo, but I'm still using
the desktop.
Yeah. And I will until they pry it from my cold dead hand. But that might happen pretty soon.
Although they are continuing to enhance the Skype desktop. Like they still are doing things to that makes it different from the UWP app. So I think they're going to keep it around for at least Windows 7 and Windows 8.1 for a while.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm wrong.
They've done kind of a soft lock on Windows 10.
They have.
If you go to the Skype website with Windows 10 and try to find it, you can't. No. You can get around it. They're not blocking it fully yet, but kind of get the feeling they will.
Yeah. I do too. At some point they will, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, but the features in this Skype update, I'm looking at the list, new layout, making it easier to access your contacts, easier to start screen sharing, take snapshots within a call. So it's good stuff they're adding.
Yeah, and I don't remember the timing exactly, but I want to say last summer sometime they unveiled what was then like the new Skype app. And the first versions they showed were on iOS and Android. Mm-hmm. And what this is, of course, is that thing on Windows 10. And there was some controversy around that new Skype app because of the animations and colors and things that were in the UI. And they're listening. I mean,
as I recall.
Nobody's pointing fingers here who liked what and who didn't like what. The point is, there was feedback.
Yeah, I think you were the only one who liked.
And they're responding to it. I thought it was pretty.
No, because they were trying to make it like Snapchat, right? I mean, when you
everybody's
saw it, you
trying
were like,
to be Snapchat.
What are you doing?
Stop it. Knock it off. Even Snapchat's not chat.
Yeah, exactly. They pretty much stopped trying to be Snapchat.
Yeah, they did.
Too.
Yeah.
Yep.
Anything but Snapchat.
Yeah.
Mail is going to get ink.
Yeah, just a minor thing. I saw this story and I thought it doesn't already support this, but that's kind of classic Microsoft.
Me too. I thought the same. I'm like, wait, you can't even commit.
Notes now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, if you go back to the very first tablet PC public demo, which was probably CES 2001, Comdex.
Yeah.
2001. I bet. On that orange prototype device, that guy who came up, Bill, whatever his name was, I bet one of the very first demos they did of inking on Windows was writing text or writing
in mail,
Outlook at the time.
Yeah,
I'm positive it's in there.
Yeah.
So here we are, whatever we're that
back.
Is, 17,
it's back, baby.
16, 17 years later, and it's still a new feature. So, yeah. But anyway, that was a surprise to me, but I guess they are testing it now. So that will be part of the Windows 10 Mail app in the RS5 timeframe. I wouldn't be surprised to see that go back to the previous version, too.
Okay, cool. Hadoop and Data Lake fans rejoice.
Wait.
One other one before that.
Hold on. Oh, no. Oh, okay.
April. Wait, we have to do the April 2018 update, the cumulative update that came out.
Oh, yeah, for 10 RS4. Yep. Wait a minute. We just got 18.03, and they're already updating it?
Oh, yeah. They've had cumulative updates for this already.
Not a Patch Tuesday update, a regular.
Yeah, so this is exactly, this is right. This is at least the second cumulative update for June.
Yeah, it is.
Well, this is almost acknowledging. This is the kind of thing you do if you were having problems with an update.
Leo, this is the most reliable and quickest update to Windows 10 that Microsoft has ever released.
I'm seeing it. Yeah, I just got it. Yeah.
But one of the notable things fixed in this cumulative update, at least they say it's fixed, is the problems people were having with 18.03, the April update, and Chrome. Some people were having Chrome just stop working after they got the April update.
Yep.
So they say this addresses an issue that causes the latest version of Google Chrome to stop working on some devices.
Good. Good.
So that's good if that actually fixes.
Google Chrome is literally the number one most used application on Windows 10.
It is.
So we broke it.
Yep. Yep.
But now we fixed
Windows
it.
10 ain't done until Chrome don't work.
Until Chrome won't run.
Yeah, yeah. There you go. I know. Screw that up.
All right. This is aptly named KB42848848. And I'm getting aptly. It right now. Aptly named.
Good. Get
aptly
it.
Named, yeah.
Yeah.
Didn't have it yesterday. Just came today. It's not very big.
Looks no, like. But you are going to have to reboot, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah. I can reboot.
It's a, you know, it's a cumulative update.
We've rebooted
my daughter's
show
home.
Before.
Hold on. I need to yell at her.
Yeah. Go yell at the almond milk lady.
Yeah. Did we get milk? Oh, good. God bless you. I mean, like, real milk.
Real milk?
Real milk. Hey, can I just tell you, you really want to live life and feel like, you know, you're living in luxury? It's almost as good as moving to Lisbon. Mm-hmm. Heavy cream in your coffee from now on.
Oh, man. Whew.
Don't. No, no more of that.
Well, you know what, though? We get what do you, the skim milk at home.
Skim milk.
So when I go out. No, I know.
It's water and with some solids in it.
Some solids. When I get milk out in the world, like in a coffee at Dunkin' Donuts or whatever, I always get whole milk. And whole milk seems like cream to me.
It seems rich. But I'm telling you, nothing.
Yeah.
First of all, Paul, you can justify it. There's no carbs in heavy cream.
No, I know. I know. It's actually better on the diet. To, the fatter you go
it's better
on,
for
the,
you.
On the,
it's like,
the cream.
Yeah. It's like eating butter. It's better.
I'm just so used to skim milk.
I don't know what. Well, then almond milk should be great.
No, it's gross.
It's just one step from skim milk to almond milk.
Yeah, but that one step is the taste of almonds.
Did you do you say almond or almond?
Almond.
Almond.
Almond. Who says almond?
Like Greg Almond.
Greg Almond. The Almond Brothers band. Yep. They had the dancing raisins, the singing raisins. They should have the Almond Brothers band.
Exactly.
I bet Greg and company said, who's left? Greg's gone, right? Who's left? Whoever's still alive probably said, no way you're doing the Almond Brothers band. That would be funny though, right? Somebody's saying Woody Allen was right in Sleeper. Remember he said we discovered whole fat was good? It is.
Yeah. Soccer.
Surprise.
Surprise.
It's just like everything else in life today. The science fiction's post-apocalyptic nightmare has come true.
Yeah.
Fat. What do you, like, fat is not fat. It doesn't make you fat. It
just makes you happy. I'm telling you, Paul, you want a lovely experience. Heavy cream. Just a dollop of heavy cream in your coffee. Smooths it all. Smooths life out. Should we talk Hadoop and data lakes?
We should.
Well, one of us should.
Well, let's. I nominate Mary Jo Foley.
Okay, you guys are going to remember this. Remember when we were at Twit Studio and we had Richard Campbell and Carl Franklin?
And
it was in 2015 and we were doing a live show. Remember the big thing we spent so
data
much
lakes.
Time talking about?
Yeah.
Azure Data Lake.
Data Lakes, yep. Bridges and
luckily
lakes.
We have whiskey to drink
we
while we
amazing
were
amazing angels
about.
Share whiskey and data lakes. Boy, is that fun.
Right.
Never forget
that. Was
that.
Good.
Yeah.
So that was 2015.
Wow.
There hasn't been a major update to Azure Data Lake until today.
You're kidding.
No. Like they've had like enhancements to it over time, but this is new. Azure Data Lake Storage Gen 2. Dun, 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 dun. If you're watching the show live, we're going to say another word that we haven't said in a while, Hadoop. Same story here. So Azure Data Lake Storage Gen 2. So first I should say, what is a data lake? It's just what it sounds like. It's a big toxic stew of data that you just mix.
What was that?
I don't know. I'm like, did I do that somehow?
I need a Hadoop sound.
We need a Hadoop sound.
Wait,
it should be an elephant. It should be an elephant.
What does that sound from?
You don't recognize this?
No, I do, but I don't recognize.
Oh, this is one of those where you know what it is, but you can't remember.
Verizon.
It's almost like an AT&T.
You guys don't.
AT&T.
Come on, chat room knows.
Like the phone comes up and this is the sound it makes.
You know what it is. It's Intel.
Oh, Intel.
God, it is. Jeez.
Boy, you guys.
How do we already forget that?
You guys already forgot.
Intel Inside.
Intel Inside. You know, Intel's
history.
How did
they not get that on the PC boot sequence?
Yeah. I think Intel's gone.
I do too. I think we're going to talk about that.
Yeah.
We're going to talk about that.
Okay.
But wait, let's talk about Azure Data Lake, guys. We're not done yet. Not done.
We tried, Paul.
Come on.
Squirrel.
All right. Anyone watching the show who has a beer in hand, you're going to hear why I'm saying this. Azure Data Lake Storage Gen 2 is just more of everything you loved about Azure Data Lake. It's bigger. They say it actually has limitless storage. It's more secure. Yes. And works with Hadoop compatible file system endpoints.
We work in the same industry, and yet what you're saying right now is like nonsense words to me. I don't.
That's how I feel about Xbox. When you talk about things with Xbox, I'm like, words, but. Anyway, today is the preview of this, and you can go to Microsoft's site and sign up to be part of the preview if you're somebody who likes to store lots of data in a big lake.
I need a lake sound too.
You do. You need some water.
Water.
Something like a boat paddling. Uh-huh.
I have my collection's too big. You see, that's the problem.
Hold on. Look what's happening. Look.
Here comes milk.
Real milk.
Oh, look at that. Yep. Is that from your daughter?
That was from my wife.
Oh,
your daughter's too surly.
Too surly. Yes. Too surly to give you milk. That's nice. But I'm telling you, heavy whipping cream. Whipping cream.
Whip.
You got to get the whip in there.
Whip cream.
Whip cream.
What if I just put it like a pat of butter on top of it? Would that
That's
be okay?
good. That's called, what do they call that? That's called
Tibetan tea, right?
Yeah. Tibetan has yak butter in it. But
yak butter.
You have to blend it in. I could do that.
But it has to be, get ready for this.
Unsalted,
free-range, grass-fed butter. Butter.
From yaks?
No, cows is okay, but yaks would be better if you could get them.
Everything that occurs in Pennsylvania is free-range something.
That's true. Yeah. That's true. Bulletproof
You have
coffee.
Deer running around in your backyard.
In Santa Monica, you can actually, next to Starbucks is a bulletproof coffee. You can go in there and get yak butter in your tea. It takes some getting used to.
Is it gamey?
Yeah.
Is this what I want? Oily. Like a gamey coffee? I just complained about the taste of almonds. Is this going to taste like a venison thing or something?
Paul, okay. You really? Okay. Just a couple of tablespoons heavy cream. And then a little, if you want, a little brown sugar, not any old brown sugar, Muscovado brown sugar.
It's the sugar that a cat from the Andes poops out on
the musket.
No, that's delicious too. That's a Vietnamese coffee.
Civet.
Oh my God.
Yeah, civet coffee. It's actually very smooth.
It's really good.
Yes. It's been extruded out the back of a cat.
It's tasty. It sounds like horrible. Christmas it's like tinsel. The best coffee you've ever had.
Mm-hmm.
Seriously.
What happened to this podcast?
I know. First, we're talking about Azure Data Lakes, and suddenly we're talking about yak butter. I mean, we could make a connection somehow, I'm sure.
I'm sure we could.
Is that a yak?
I don't know. I don't have a yak sound. I don't know. It's the morning zoo. 6:15 in the city, 48 degrees. Let's go to the chopper and see how it's going. Captain Mark! It's really heavy on the Kiwanis Expressway.
I see a yak down there.
There's a yak on the highway.
There's a backup in front of the yak coffee.
Oh, my God.
Those yaks.
Are we done with the... this is bad, really. This is us acting out, Mary Jo. You get your gong. Because we're not...
No gong. We have part two.
She's deflated us in the best way possible, which is just by being an adult.
Yeah, and showing us as we are.
Mm-hmm.
Short.
There's
pants.
More data news, though.
Oh, good.
Want to hear some
more?
Oh,
thank God.
Another thing that happened today was Microsoft released to general availability. General availability globally, Azure IoT Edge. What is Azure IoT Edge, you may ask? It's a service that lets you take AI and other kinds of compute workloads and bring them down to your IoT device at the edge. So you can actually do computation at the edge instead of having to bounce back to the cloud and do it in the cloud. So this is a really big deal for Microsoft because they keep talking about intelligent cloud, intelligent edge. And they didn't really have the full intelligent edge story all put together until today when this became generally available. Why is this related to data? Because to do things like AI workloads, you need a lot of data. You need data, you know, a pool of data, perhaps a data lake. Here we are again, data lake. So that you can train machine learning models and such using all this data that you have. Take advantage of all the sensor data that you're collecting at the edge and do something with it in terms of like running analytics on it. So yeah, two big data announcements today.
I have three questions now. I had two, but you just said something that was kind of interesting, which was, or is it true that data lake is so named because it's bigger than a pool?
I would believe so.
Okay.
Yeah.
And Azure IoT Edge, does it require Windows 10 IoT something something on the client, or is it more agnostic than that?
It's more agnostic. Cross-platform devices, works with devices of all kinds, supports SDKs of all types, Node.js, okay. Python, Java, C, C Sharp. So yeah, okay. It's like, here's, you guys can have the device you want or need at the edge, and we're going to use this service to connect to it from Azure. And
question three is, does that then include up to and including the Azure Sphere devices?
I would believe it would. I don't think they called out in the blog post today Azure. No, I think they did. I think they mentioned Azure Sphere. So if you remember, Azure Sphere is Linux, Linux microcontroller at the endpoint.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Look, you were actually interested in that one.
You caught me at the end.
I did.
I got hooked right at the end.
Yeah, so we haven't, it's been ages since we said Hadoop and Data Lake, and now we've done it again.
And now you've said it enough that half of our audience is drunk.
They are. A lot of people were lining up their beers before the show when they saw me post about this. They said, are you going to talk about Data Lakes and Hadoop? I'm like, yes, I am. So
yeah. Put the samplers out. We're going to town.
Exactly. Yeah, I'm getting cheers on Twitter right now. And then we
this
have
this is
Sir
not
Mars.
My Twitter experience, but it must be nice.
No, this is good. Sir Mars, this week on Milk Break Weekly.
Yep.
I think we've
almond milk is not milk and other stories.
Come on, man. You just like destroyed yourself here.
I think I destroyed my palate. Like even this tastes weird to me now because I've been drinking almond milk.
No.
All you can think about is yak butter.
It's because your body craves the goodness of organic. Oh. Heavy whipping cream.
Oh, man, right. You have it right there.
Cows in
that's
Berkeley.
That's nice and local, too. That's good.
Oh, yeah. We get the best because these are the cows I see every day as I drive home.
They benefit from the mist coming off the Pacific,
you
just
bet.
Like a Pinot Noir grape.
You bet. Some fine Sonoma cows. Mm-hmm. I'm getting a cup of coffee brewed right now. I'm going to demonstrate. But before we do, can I talk about ExpressVPN, our brand new sponsor?
Sure.
Paul, you used it in Europe?
I did. Yeah, last summer.
Yeah. So a lot of people in the U.S. use ExpressVPN. For instance, maybe you want to watch World Cup soccer and you don't have a cable subscription, or they're doing things to your games you just don't like. Well, see, for instance, I like to watch it in Spanish. Actually, the most fun is to watch it from the country of one of the countries, right? The broadcasters from Nigeria or the broadcasters from Belgium or the... That is really fun. ExpressVPN is the VPN leader in terms of speed. By the way, that's really important when you're looking for a VPN, especially if you want to stream. If you have a VPN that goes through a slow server, then that means your video isn't going to stream very well. It's going to buffer and stuff. Not ExpressVPN. They're the world's leading VPN provider. You can securely use the internet without being tracked. A lot of people use ExpressVPN at home just so their ISP can't see, you know, everything they do. And we know ISPs are the worst. They will literally sell your information to the highest bidder.
ExpressVPN doesn't log. They keep it safe and secure, private and anonymous. Browse, email, download, or stream. They have more servers than anybody else. 148 cities in 94 countries with unlimited speeds and unlimited server switches. So you really get full throughput. That makes a big difference. They've got apps for everything. In fact, if you go to expressvpn.com/windows, you'll see they not only have apps for Windows and Macintosh, but they've got Linux, Android, iOS, everything you'd want. And their easy-to-use app encrypts all your internet data, hides your IP address, protects your entire connection. And all this for less than $7 a month. And it runs seamlessly in the background. Windows, Mac, iOS, Android, Linux, even on routers. Every time you use the internet without an ExpressVPN, you're exposing yourself. That's not a good thing. Take back your internet privacy today. Find out how you can get 3 months free when you buy a one-year package. ExpressVPN.com/windows. Look at all the little flags of all the countries. 94 countries, 148 cities. That really means you're going to get incredible throughput no matter where you're going. ExpressVPN.com/windows. 3 months free when you buy the one-year package. ExpressVPN.com/windows. 2,000-plus global VPN servers optimized for speed, unlimited bandwidth, no throttling, no restrictions, offshore privacy protection, no logging. It's everything you're looking for in a VPN. ExpressVPN.com/windows. And we welcome them to the Windows Weekly family. I didn't realize you had used them in Europe, and maybe that has something to do with why we got them on the show. So thank you, Paul. Paul Thurrott, they knew they were watching. No.
I'll take credit for that. Why not?
Paul Thurrott, Mary Jo Foley. We are talking Winders. And now I think it's time to talk something about Paul and I have really had been a little bit of a bete noire for us. Is the lack of a USB-C power supply on our surfaces.
Let me reverse these two related stories, because there was the news story this week. There were Microsoft, I guess, told The Verge that they were going to release the long-awaited, for some reason, Surface USB-C dongle, right?
Yeah.
And what do we know about that? Anything? It's $80. Businesses
get it first as of this Friday. We don't know when consumers are going to get it. We don't know if it's going to be at retail.
So, but the question with this thing for me is, what is the point of this? Like, looks like a Surface power supply, so it's got a brick. The brick has a USB-C port in it. It's not Thunderbolt 3.
Right.
The other end is a cable with a Surface Connect fin on it, if you will, a Surface Connect connector. You know, that magnetic thing that slides into the Surface Connect power port on a Surface PC. Mm-hmm. So why would anyone need this or want this, right? I don't know. I can't think of any good reasons. Like, if you wanted to go from your Surface device to a USB-C peripheral of some kind, you could use a $10 off-the-shelf USB-A to USB-C dongle. Plug it into a USB port and be fine. You're not getting Thunderbolt speed, so there's not like some advantage to this thing. I guess you could, if you had a powerful enough USB-C charger, you could plug that into the box, but then you've got this extra complicated thing now where there are three pieces instead of two, where you have the USB-C dongle, you have the USB-C cable, and then you have whatever power plug for that USB-C cable. Yeah. I don't quite understand what the point is. It also appears to only work with the Surface Laptop and the latest Surface Pro.
Right. It does.
I don't get it, basically.
Yeah. I mean, is it just for a checkbox? Like, to just say, do you have USB-C? Well, you can connect it to USB-C peripheral. Sure. But we have it. Hmm. I don't know.
It seems pointless to me. I mean, phasing in USB-C as a port on new devices is fine. They did that with Surface Book 2. Also not Thunderbolt 3, though.
Right.
But at least it's there for video out and for USB-C peripheral connectivity. And you can actually charge over it. It's a little slower than using a normal charger, but it does work.
Yeah.
But it was this thing, this news story, this resurfacing, if you will, of this peripheral. Sorry.
Yeah.
That made me rethink, of course, as it would, about the USB-C Thunderbolt controversy with Surface. Why don't they just adopt this thing? And I keep thinking with each subsequent generation of Surface PCs that we're going to, you know, there'll be some, it might take a period of time, but there'll be a transition where they'll go from Surface Connect, which is USB-based, and they will transition to Thunderbolt 3 over USB-C, like the rest of the industry. But it occurred to me when it was this thing, this triggered this thought. You know, Surface Connect, which is the connector you see on this dongle, of course, is USB-based. Like I said, I wrote in an article that it was USB 3 exactly. It's not exactly USB 3, but it's USB-based. It has the same basic limitations of USB from a performance perspective, meaning for display purposes, you can drive two external displays. But if they're 4K displays, they can't run at 60 hertz. You can only drive one 60-hertz external display. This is kind of a minor point for most people, but Thunderbolt 3 also has better transfer rates for data, and so those peripherals could be a lot faster.
Mm. I think the reason they say they don't or haven't, at least one reason, is backward compatibility. And they put out a statement like ages ago saying, don't worry, we're never going to back away from the Surface Connect port. So if you can buy things that use it and you can have cases made, you know, that take advantage of it, and you don't have to worry.
So this factors into my new theory. That's interesting that you said that. Companies that provide PCs to the enterprise, Dell, HP, Lenovo, one of the guarantees that they make to the companies who are their customers is that if you buy into a platform, whatever it might be, that the peripherals, the expansion devices, the batteries in the old days when you used to have batteries that would slide out instead of DVD drives and so forth, will remain compatible with future versions of these devices for some period of time, usually 7 to 10 years. Microsoft has a rich history of 10-year support cycles on enterprise products. And you could imagine that for Microsoft, the importance of the enterprise and of businesses to the Surface line is very strong, and that they want to have that same kind of guarantee. And I understand that, and actually that's a legit concern. If you think about that from a consumer perspective, the thought that some future generation of Surface PC will have a power supply that is not compatible with the power supply you have on your previous computer is nonsense. Mm. There's no reason for that kind of backward compatibility, especially when it hampers performance in the future. But for businesses, that actually makes sense.
Yeah.
So here's my thought, and I'm curious what you guys think about this. I think they are going to add Thunderbolt 3 capabilities to future Surface PCs, but they're not necessarily going to do it via a USB-C port, although, by the way, they could do that as well. I think what they're going to do is rev the Surface Connect port and connectors to support Thunderbolt 3 capabilities. And that in order to make this work, you could have, if you kind of imagine what goes off of this thing, there really aren't that many things. Mm. Power cables and power, you know, adapters and the Surface dock. So there could be a third generation Surface dock. It could look identical to the new one, I guess. The fin might be a little different. If you plug it into a new device, it will support Thunderbolt 3, 60 hertz, 4K, two displays. Plug it into a Surface Book 1, Surface Book 2, any, whatever legacy device. Mm. It will just work like it used to, like USB. Mm.
So when I was writing about tips I had gotten on the next versions, the revved versions of Surface Laptop and Surface Pro 5, you know, the current one, I keep hearing they're going to have Surface Connect still. But I also heard they could get a USB-C port.
But I mean, they did it on Surface.
It probably won't be Thunderbolt, right?
They could do that, right? In other words, there's two ways this could go. There's no way they can ignore this.
No.
They could do Thunderbolt 3 over USB-C like everyone else, but retain the Surface Connect for backward compatibility. There's no reason not to do that.
Yeah.
But I'm wondering if they're not going to make Surface Connect more powerful, and there's good reason to do it. I was talking to Brad about this, and he pointed out to me that if you think about how Surface Book is architected, the screen has the chip in it.
Right.
It has the RAM and it has the storage. When you plug it into the base, it connects it to the DGPU and to the USB expansion. Mm-hmm. That's a Surface Connect port as well. So it's the bandwidth there is limited to the power of that thing. Mm-hmm. If they advance the platform so that thing is Thunderbolt 3 complete, you know, or that same capabilities, That would enable much more powerful bases, right? And I think that's one of the current little limitations of Surface Book 2 is you can only do so much with that because you can only drive so much bandwidth over that connection.
Yeah. I think you have an interesting theory.
I'm not a hardware guy, and people could probably poke holes in this theory, but I've been really kind of down on Microsoft for not supporting this. And they always talk about, well, there are certain cables and plugs that, you know, fry PCs and do things like this. But I point at HP and Dell and Lenovo. They've solved this. Yeah. They've solved this. Yeah. Mm.
I have to say, I'm not going to buy a laptop that doesn't have not only USB-C, but USB-C charging, because it's just the way it is now. Mm. Welcome to the modern world. Mm. USB-C has been a failure in so many ways. That Type 3 connector is weird. You can't tell anything from it. You don't know if it's data, video, charging, all three, none.
Yep.
So it is a failure, but that doesn't mean we need a new one to replace it. Mm-hmm. And a proprietary Microsoft charging solution is just old school. Nobody does. I mean, not nobody, but fewer and fewer people are doing that.
It's basically, once you get past a certain price range, it is nobody. You know, you can still find, I just reviewed a Lenovo Flex 6 laptop. It actually still has a little barrel power plug. That's actually kind of uncommon these days.
Yeah, it's getting more so.
Computer starts at $475, right? That's why.
Yeah,
you could charge it over USB.
Oh, look at that. See, that's something you don't get with almond milk.
Yeah, just taste.
Taste.
Good taste.
This is the USB-C of creamers.
Yes. I would argue it's the Thunderbolt 3 of creamers.
Yeah, Thunderbolt 3 of creamers.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Except no substitutes.
I'm using the USB 2.0 of...
Skim milk.
Whole
Did
milk.
This make my thing
USB
slower?
Skim
what
milk.
Is this thing?
He's using skim milk.
Skim. Oh, that should be like even lower, shouldn't it?
It's USB 1.1.
It should be.
Look at that.
Almond milk is the FireWire 800.
It's like the clouds in my coffee. Clouds in my coffee. You're so vain. Boy, there's really something going on downtown. Are you near Fifth Avenue?
Yeah, pretty close.
Yeah, Trump Tower must be going on.
Brad and I were in New York on Monday for meetings, and I was walking down the street.
I saw your nuggets from...
Yeah, those are Brad's nuggets.
Brad's nuggets.
Those were actually real. Those
rattling hum tots.
Yep.
I tasted those, and they were awful.
They didn't look good.
They were actually really bad.
They
really
greasy
bad.
As hell.
They didn't look like the good tots that we've had there.
No.
I think someone made them who didn't know how to really make good tots.
Wasn't it Rattlingham East?
It was. But, they know how to make tots.
That's the good Rattlingham, Leo.
Oh, West is the best. Tachos?
Tachos.
No.
Tots with nacho toppings.
No.
Yeah,
no, he ordered it correctly with the cheese dipping sauce, but that cheese sauce was terrible, too. It was
he should have gotten a different
melted cheese whiz or something. I don't know what that was.
Why has the show become Food Central here?
It all started with almond milk. Future of the microprocessor. So Intel, good article in Stratechery, Ben Thompson saying Intel's...
Yeah.
Talked about Intel's mistakes. And, you know, I'd forgotten this, but Intel was a DRAM manufacturer when Andy Grove came along, and they were getting eaten alive by the commodity DRAM manufacturers in Asia. They couldn't... And they switched.
Didn't they drop it?
All processors. And then they went through the integrated route. We design them, we build them, we ship them, we make them for Microsoft Windows, we make them for PCs. And it's been very, very good to Intel.
Until, a little bit like Windows was very good to Microsoft for many years.
Until what recently.
What happened? I can't remember.
And he points out that, you know, the culture of a company is designed to preserve the integrity of its profit center right up until it doesn't.
This is literally, it's the Microsoft story in hardware.
It is.
Yeah.
And in fact, it's why Microsoft's so remarkable, because when Ballmer left and Nadella came along, they made a U-turn that seems to have worked. But it's very hard to do.
Yeah. I think, honestly, whatever story is written about Microsoft in the future, whether they fail or succeed, their attempt to move very quickly to right this ship is notable. And it's very hard to walk away from that thing that was how you made money.
Yeah.
You know, there's this kind of wave coming in the PC world that has to do with ARM processors and Qualcomm and whatever else. And we'll see what happens. You know, so far it's gotten off to, you know, kind of a rough start, I think it's fair to say. But having spoken to Qualcomm, I was kind of re-energized about their plans. They talked about having multiple generation plans for future PC chips and so forth. And they seem to be taking this very seriously, which is really interesting to me. And I think they see the opportunity here, to kick the dinosaur while it's down. And this past week, some separate rumors, a bunch of different rumors kind of emerged about something called the Snapdragon 100. And we had previously heard on the record about the Snapdragon 850, which is Qualcomm's kind of second generation chip aimed at PCs. Really, it's the first generation one because the first gen was just the A35, which was a smartphone tablet chip. And this notion that they're splitting up their product lines to address whatever market that chip is designed for. And they're doing that with AR and VR. They're doing it with mobile chips. They're doing it with PC chips. And I'm sure they're doing it with other things that I just can't remember, I didn't know about. The 1000 is particularly interesting to me because it kind of goes in the exact opposite direction most of the industry is going. It's going to be a bigger chip than the current chips physically. And it's going to be specifically oriented to performance. And I believe that this is going to be the first one that they make that is aimed at the desktop PC market, not necessarily at mobile PCs. And I think that's the big news, you know, that they are kind of moving up market, if you will, within the scope of the PC market. So it's not just about these really thin, light, battery heavy, you know, but low performance devices. They're going to try to go for the mainstream PC market.
I think this is very interesting. And
it is.
Yeah. If I'm Intel, I'm shivering in my boots at this point. Because, well, not only this, but, you know, Apple basically is saying we're going
Apple's
ARM.
Gonna do
we're going to do our own chips.
Of course they are. Mm-hmm. Of course they are. Mm-hmm. Apple's done a tremendous job with their A series.
Is it an almond cookie?
It's a biscotti. Nice. This is the only almonds that go in coffee.
Yeah, keep that almond away from the coffee, Leo. Yeah.
The only almonds that go in coffee.
No, it's okay. Intel has kind of played the cards that they have, right? Intel can ratchet up the performance, which they have. They've doubled the cores and the U series chips and all that kind of stuff, and actually on other chips as well. This is the play that they have, and there is a point to be made that one of the ways you can make money in the PC industry these days is on premium PCs and on gaming PCs, and that is Intel's strong suit right now for sure. But as far as the mainstream of the PC market goes, unless they have some thing that we don't know about, unless they have some company they can buy that we don't know about, I kind of feel like they're years behind because they just simply have not been investing in this kind of chip architecture. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, and this is we've been talking about this for a couple of years now, some new phone will come out, whether it's an iPhone or some kind of an 8 whatever processor from Qualcomm, where it's like, this thing is, you know, it was like desktop class performance with a, you know, kind of a air quote thing around it. And now it's getting to the point where, no, it literally is desktop class performance. It's interesting. It's an interesting threat. And I think they have the same opportunity to do to Intel what Apple and Google did to Microsoft.
I wonder if they're working on this whole problem with hyper-threading and speculative execution. I mean, I know they're subject to it. Every modern processor is. To a timing attacks using these speculative execution techniques. But if they were going to do a desktop processor, if you really wanted to kill Intel, you'd find a way to have performance without speculative execution.
Mm-hmm.
And then, game over. Because Intel, I think Intel's chip roadmap probably is, what, 3-4 years ahead? They're not going to fix that for years.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
That's the point. You're right. In other words, they would have to, in a sense, admit defeat, even though they've not yet been defeated, but they kind of see the future as clearly as it's going to be and say, you know, we're going to do a half step here and step back and rethink things. And this little upward trajectory we've been enjoying is going to come to a halt for a little while because we need to figure this out. And I just don't see them doing that.
Well, it's good. I mean, it's good for consumers. Intel yeah. doesn't do anything unless it's pressed with competition. Yep. AMD was the last competitor to push Intel. I think with Ryzen, they actually are pushing Intel now. And you're seeing 7-nanometer from TSMC.
Yeah.
Intel just can't seem to get that going. I mean, it's an interesting time.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, Intel, like you said, Intel needs to be kind of kicked around a little bit for them to respond to this properly. It's just a matter of timing.
They're being badly. Yeah. I mean, the only holdout at this point, they've lost mobile. It looks like they may lose desktop. And then it's
server
chips,
data center.
Are they
in a way
losing the data
too?
Center too?
Well, yeah. I mean, this is another one of those wow. advantages of these ARM chips is the thermals on these things, right? They can do like high cluster kind of ARM-based, server racks or whatever, and they consume a lot less power than the Intel stuff. It's not there. It hasn't happened yet. I don't mean, don't get me wrong. There are no ARM PCs outselling Intel PCs of any kind. There are no, they're there. But I think everyone, including people inside of Intel, can kind of see where the market's going. And they're going to have to adjust. And again, if Intel ends up winning and they pull a Microsoft and they did it, that will still benefit all of us. It's fine.
We don't have to root. We don't have to choose a winner. We just we just have to sit back and
be happy this is happening. Happy. Yeah, exactly. Because this is going to have a positive outcome for everybody.
Yeah, I think so. Everybody but whoever doesn't do it. Yeah. All right. Yeah. Qualcomm 1000, I like it. Mm. It's a good number. Okay, Mary Jo, you had your Hadoop moment.
I did.
Now it's time for the Xbox.
I'll make this one quick and painless.
You always say that, Paul.
He does, and it's never either, is it?
No. Okay.
It's time for Xbox.
Did I talk about this last week?
I don't know.
You did.
Do it again.
I don't think we talked about this. Look, Microsoft is poised to lose in video game consoles for the third straight generation, right? And they're making changes, and this is much like Intel. You faced with this kind of, in this case, literal market defeat, what do? Do you just keep beating the same drum and doing the same thing, or do you kind of recalibrate? And the one thing that Microsoft has done that I think is super smart is, faced with the reality of how the PC market has gone, they're changing their strategy. And they've done all these things that are very gamer, customer focused, Xbox Game Pass, et cetera. So I love the whole Xbox thing. So part of what that means is less focus on hardware and more of a focus on service. And that's where Microsoft's strengths come in, because Microsoft is the cloud company. They have the infrastructure and the expertise to kind of make that stuff happen. There's still going to be more Xbox consoles. We already know that. But I really think that stuff's going to be de-emphasized for the services. And this is semi-related, which is that, when E3 just happened, they mentioned the Xbox Adaptive Controller, which is that accessible controller, but they didn't really talk about hardware very much at all aside from that. They didn't talk about a coming new version of the Xbox Elite Controller, which we know is happening. And they didn't talk about VR. And kind of sideways to the show, off to the side, separate from the show, they told, I think it was, I forgot the name of the company, Game Industry Biz, that actually they don't have any plans to bring VR or MR to the Xbox One. And that was how they kind of revealed it to the world. They didn't really announce it. They just kind of noted it to one publication. It took about a week for the rest of the world to learn about this, because I don't think many non-gamer insiders read this publication. But it was an interesting revelation, and I think speaks to the fact that this hardware thing doesn't make as much sense for Xbox anymore. And so if you think about VR as a platform for gaming, obviously, people who are in the Microsoft sphere, not necessarily the Xbox console, but Windows gamers or Xbox gamers on Windows, have Oculus Rift, have HTC Vive. They have the experience of looking over at PlayStation and seeing how well that their VR thing did. And they've sold a million plus units. It's done pretty well within the context of what it is. But, think about something like the Kinect. I mean, what would VR and Xbox be, right? It would be a sub-Kinect success. It would be terrible. Microsoft is going to go to gamers and say, please bring your VR stuff to our platform. after they just abandoned the few developers that supported Kinect, it wouldn't go anywhere. And I think this is the right decision. You know, if you want VR gaming, you have choices. You have mobile choices. You have PC choices. You can go to PlayStation, I guess. But I think this is the right choice for the Xbox platform because this avoids another defeat. This would just be another nail in the coffin of the bad news that has been Xbox for a while. And what they want and what they need is good news. And I think not bringing VR to Xbox is good news. And I think it's the right decision.
Yeah.
It was never going to be successful.
I think it's the nail in the coffin for VR.
Yeah.
Maybe that's going too far.
So by the way, when we were in New York, Brad and I swung by the Microsoft store and that was enjoyable on a number of levels. But while we were there, we recorded a little thing on his phone and these guys came up with a giant loader full of white boxes. And I thought I saw what it said on them. So I actually kind of chased them around the corner. Whoa. And they were throwing the boxes in the back of a truck and I took a picture of it. And what was on the box, what the boxes were Samsung mixed reality headsets.
Oh, wow.
Mm. They were coming out of the Microsoft store. Now, there are two possibilities here. Somebody either bought a bunch of these, which I think we can all agree is ludicrous, or they're sending these things back, which I think we can all agree is possible.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I asked the guy, I said, what are you doing with those things? And he didn't speak English. But he pointed up the street. He kind of motioned up the street. He said, they're going over there, which I took to mean the East River. I don't know where they are.
mixed reality sleeps with the fishes.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm still bullish.
Piece of concrete to each one of these things.
I'm still bullish, somewhat bullish on augmented or mixed reality. I'm not so hot about VR.
Yeah, there are so many good stories about AR and why AR can make sense. Oh. You know, Mary Jo's gone to Japan a couple times. The ability to hold up your camera, your phone, and through the camera have it translate automatically all of the signs in some Asian language is an astonishing capability. I talk about the museum thing where you see a dinosaur skeleton, you hold up your phone or tablet, and it shows you what that dinosaur would have looked like, you know, in real life or something. There's neat stuff on AR. VR, you're pretty much talking about motion sickness, low quality graphics, you know, it never being quite right, you know, on your face. It just
sweaty.
I'm not saying there aren't uses for it, but it just seems more limited.
Mm-hmm. It's mostly, I think, I mean, I think the idea is fine. I think it's the technology is so far behind that this is going to have to wait a better technology, I think.
Augmented reality is something you could take with you out into the world, and that makes it useful.
Yeah.
You know? And some of the use cases beyond whatever I said earlier are exciting. They're interesting. You know, it might not be something any one of us every day would ever use every day, but when it comes up, when you are able to do those things, it's really cool. And I don't feel like I can say the same for VR.
VR may be technologically, I mean, AR may be technologically way off as well. I mean, we don't know. I've seen some pretty good AR demonstrations, but,
a lot of this stuff, it's almost all educational for some reason. Not that there's anything wrong with that, but I sort of imagine. I always remember with VR, I used to talk about the you put on the headset. And I'm in a Paris cafe, and I can hear all the sounds around me, and it's immersive and all this stuff. And how awesome that would be! Yeah. You know, with AR, I kind of imagine walking down the streets of Paris or some other place, and you hold up your phone or whatever it is to some real world thing in front of the Eiffel Tower or whatever, and here's what it looked like in 1840, or here's what this place looked like.
Cool.
And, you know, whatever. There's some really neat stuff.
I guess the thing is AR works with this kind of lesser technology already. AR has huge growth potential. If you could put in normal spectacles and a heads-up display, you know, and be lightweight and et cetera. But that's also way off.
So the fact that it can work through the display on the phone you're already carrying is what makes it really cool. It's amazing.
Yeah.
Even, you know, I often use my wife as an example because she doesn't care about technology. She's super smart. She's smarter than I am, but she just doesn't care about this stuff.
That's proof positive. She's super smart.
Yep. So we were sitting out back and we were talking. We saw some bright lights in the sky that were not stars because it was too light out. And I said, there must be planets. And I kind of Googled it. And I said, I think that's the southeast. So that must be, I think one of them was Jupiter. And then it mentioned, by the way, if you look to the west, you'll see Venus. It's even brighter. And we had a walk around the house and sure enough, there it was. And as I'm doing this and I'm proving it to myself that what I thought it was is what it was. my wife has got her phone out and she's going like this with it. And I said, what are you doing? And she had installed some kind of an astronomy app and she was looking at all the constellations and all the stuff in the sky. And she was like, yeah, that is Venus or whatever. And I thought, like, my wife, who was not into technology, instantly found an AR application. It was really kind of cool. And again, it's, you're not going to pull it out every day and use it every day. It's not like that. But it is amazing when you see something like that. They have an app for planes in the sky. If you see a plane going over it, you can point it and say, it will say, that's Delta 143. And Paul's sitting in 20E. And I won't say that. But I mean, it's some of that stuff is pretty amazing. This one's going to be very quick. But Microsoft today announced the Xbox Game Pass games that are coming in July. And actually, they're not all hitting on July 1st. But Dirt 4, Zombie Army Trilogy, and Abzu. Actually, also Shadow Complex Remastered, which I think I actually paid for. Elder Scrolls 4, Oblivion, Fallout 3. Human Fall Flat are all coming on July 1, and then Bomber Crew is July 10, and Warhammer Verminitude 2.
What kind of word is Verminitude?
I don't know. Verminitude. I had to look at that twice to make sure. I think I pronounced that right. Verminitude.
Verminitude.
Coming July 11.
Vermintide. So it's Vermintide, dude. Vermintide. Verminitude.
God, it's like my Pinterest of unpronounceable words.
They needed to put a space there. Vermintide.
Vermintide. Oh, jeez. Vermintide. See, I try to pronounce everything like
Fragile.
It's French.
Yeah. Vermintide. Vermintide. Yeah.
Now you're trying to pronounce it like it's Italian.
Yes. How would you say it in Portuguese?
Oh, it'd be either be like a shush sound in there.
Verminitide.
Verminitide.
Versimilitude.
Yeah.
Vermintide.
Vermintide. That makes way more sense.
This is good. I'm keeping my Game Pass. I got it for Sea of Thieves, but that paled quickly.
Yeah, yeah.
But some of these other games are... I love Fallout. I already
own like
Fallout.
Empty Seas of Thieves, you know, if you know what I mean.
Empty Seas of Thieves. Lots of sea. Not so many thieves.
Not so many thieves.
Yep. My favorite is when they call it No Man's Sea. That's a gamer in joke.
Yep, that's good.
Sorry, I didn't mean to abandon you.
I heard they eventually fixed that game, by the way, but I gave up too early.
Yeah, the DLC is supposed to be very good. But somebody said there's pizza in the other room. They do this to you, and I apologize. When I'm clearly not on a diet today. They apologize. This is lunch day at the studios. It's also massage day, so if I disappear for 20 minutes.
Actually, if you just scrape the top of that off and don't eat the bread, that's perfectly healthy.
And that's the best part.
The bread? Yeah, probably. Yeah.
No. The stuff on top.
Oh, the top, yeah.
So you switched to Microsoft Launcher, which I thought was a brave and bold thing to do.
Yeah.
How's it been?
It's okay. You know, actually through, you know, there's a person last week that helped me on the show. I remember it removed that button, which was super helpful because I hated that thing. And somebody on Twitter helped me with the Google feed thing, which is not perfect because the truth is you can't get the Google feed in the Microsoft feed. But what you can get is a Google feed widget, which doesn't actually display anything from the feed. But when you tap that, it loads the feed. So it's kind of like one extra click or tap or whatever. But this kind of raised – well, there's two issues that came out of this for me. One is that there is an entire market of launchers that's available for Android. Most are free, but you can pay for some of them as well. That's interesting to me because it kind of speaks to the fully customizable nature of Android. And if you're into that kind of thing and you can make it be whatever you want it to be, I guess, that's cool. But for the Microsoft thing specifically – you know, why would you use this thing? What's the point? What does it bring? Like what benefit do I get? And I sort of think of this in the context of the right tool for the job theory that I have that, you know, we as an industry have spent a lot of time trying to get these convergence devices going. But the truth is my phone does certain things. I watch content and I read on a tablet and I get work done on a laptop. And so I find that these things do their own jobs well. They don't need to be two in ones or whatever. I'm not going to read on my laptop. You know, it just doesn't make sense to me. But the promise of the Microsoft Launcher is these cross-device experiences, which today are kind of on the rough side, right? So you can do things like continue on PC if you're browsing on Microsoft Edge on Android or iOS. At Build, Microsoft talked about bringing a version of Microsoft Launcher that was enterprise compatible, meaning that you could institute policy across it for your employees, which is kind of interesting, not to me personally, but kind of interesting. And they talked about implementing Timeline through Microsoft Launcher, which is actually really interesting to me. The way it works on iOS today is you actually, I'm not sure if it's today. I haven't tried this yet, but I believe it's today, is you can actually access your timeline as you see it on Windows 10 on your iOS or your iPhone through Microsoft Edge, which is kind of a goofy way to do it. If it was integrated into the shell of the Microsoft Launcher, that would be a useful way to do it. And so if I was working in a Microsoft Word document on my PC and I brought up my timeline on the phone and I tapped on that thing, it would open in Microsoft Word on my phone and I could do light edits or whatever I might want to do. Like that, that is actually really useful. It's also not available today. So they announced that back in whenever that was, early May at Build. And this I got there by a kind of a roundabout route. But the reason I looked at Microsoft Launcher in the first place was to see that stuff. And when it wasn't there, I had to kind of go back and I rewatched that part of the keynote, the day two keynote that Joe B was part of, to see how they had worded it. And it was sort of subtle, but they were basically talking about how in the future you would be able to do this. And then I went and looked at the blog post that they made describing these new features. And sure enough, once again, it was a little subtle, but the language was, this is available today in Microsoft Edge on iOS. It will be available soon through Timeline and in other Microsoft apps too, on Android as well. So it's not there yet. And so as of today, you know, June 2018, what's the point? It has the word Microsoft in it, and some people like that. There really isn't much of a point. I really like the customizable nature of this thing. I suspect that other launches are also very customizable, so yeah, that may not be a unique to Microsoft thing. There are some unique Microsoft user experiences in there that are not the tiles and hubs and things that we enjoyed from Windows Phone, but are perhaps a more modern take on how Microsoft sees the mobile UI. And it's good. It's something I can continue using. There's no reason not to. But what I'm really looking forward to is this thing that's going to happen in the future, and it's just not there yet.
On the other hand, Edge is pretty nice on Android. And because Android does let you choose your own default browser, unlike iOS.
That's right. Yeah,
I've been using Edge on my Android device, and I kind of like it.
Yeah, I think I mentioned this recently, last week or maybe 2 weeks ago, but I actually prefer Microsoft Edge on Android to Chrome. And
you convinced me. That's why.
There was that reading view thing, which is amazing.
It's got an ad blocker built in now automatically.
And now it has an ad blocker. And it's kind of, you know, these are two things we're not going to see on Chrome. Google very conspicuously has not brought an extension capability to Chrome for mobile. So you couldn't even add it from third parties.
There is ad blocking in Chrome. It's just not, I mean, the ad block plus that's in Edge is a little bit harder core.
The Chrome ad blocking is just, it's not. Right. As long as you're in the ad association or whatever it is that Google's part of, you're going to get through. So anyway, I you're right. Edge on mobile is great, actually, and anyone should try that. Anyone who listens to the show, for
sure. And as you pointed out last week, it's really since it's all WebKit, it's really just a different UI. So you just
On top of whatever the native browser.
So it's all using the same native browser stuff.
Everyone works differently. For me, I do use the bookmarks bar on the desktop. It doesn't make you can't display it on mobile as the screen's too small, but. I really don't. The truth is, I don't access too many bookmarks all that often,
Me neither.
And I go through, I don't know, once a year. I don't have it like a schedule on my calendar, but roughly once a year I might go through and I kind of trim out the things that are especially useless to me anymore. And it's gone down a lot. But, I have a couple of, the forms for my site when I want to post an article or Google News or a couple small things like that. But, as far as like hitting the sites every day, it's 3 or 4 or 5 maybe. It's not that many.
I have enough phones that I can kind of like on Samsung. I generally use a Samsung browser.
Oh, do you really?
That's fine. Yeah, because it's fast.
The thing for me though, I think the big, and this is probably a big thing for people. If you use bookmarks or favorites or whatever a lot, The mobile browser thing may matter a lot.
It does, especially you can sync with the one you use desktop wise.
Yeah. If you use password sync through the browser, that might matter a lot too.
Right. I don't. I use LastPass, but I'm interested in Firefox on Android as well because it it does have extensions. So,
the one thing you have going for you on Edge is what you can do is on Windows 10. Go into Edge, go into Settings, and sync your Chrome or whatever, Firefox.
I love that.
Passwords and favorites. Yep. And now that you get them on mobile, too. And so if I have my login saved for my website in Chrome, I can browse it on Edge on Android, and it autofills that. So that's nice.
This is one of those things where you really, in Android, have an advantage because you can try all of them. They're all roughly have rough parity because Google allows you to say whichever, just like Windows does, what your default browser is.
You could, and I've done this, it's not super efficient, but you could have five launchers installed. Only one of them can be the default.
Right.
But if you just run the thing, it runs like an app. As long as you don't press home, that will go back to the default. You can even test launchers side by side, you know, just to see how they do things.
I do that often. Yeah.
I probably have at least four browsers on my Android phone, I would imagine. Mm-hmm.
We're kind of crazy that way.
Well, we have a responsibility to test these things too. I mean, it's our job. Compulsive weirdos. Although we are. Yes. We are compulsive weirdos who feel the need to tell people about those compulsions.
You're seekers.
We are. We're always looking for a better experience. That's actually a very. You're playing on the Microsoft term seekers, but it's actually kind of true.
Right. Yeah. Yeah,
not with regard to seeking Windows 10 1803. No. No one's that curious. I'm 1803 curious. But
I'm 1803 adjacent.
I definitely think and Android's made for this, the idea of figuring out which launcher you like best, which browser you like best. It's worth it.
There's a certain, and it's 85% or whatever the population, certain part of the population who kind of appreciates this stuff. And the ability to go in and set things like your default assistant, you know?
Right. I want that.
It's amazing. I mean, Microsoft doesn't do that in Windows 10.
That's right.
You know? Microsoft is taking away the ability to use a default browser in Windows 10. You know, that's one of the things they're trying to get rid of. Android is by far the most open mainstream
operating system.
Yep. Yeah.
Visual search is coming to Bing, Edge, and the launcher. What do you mean by visual search?
This is where you use your camera and you point it at something and it tells you what it isn't.
I love that. Hot dog.
Yeah, I love it when it works. Yes. right. I feel like we've had something like this in the Microsoft sphere for a long time. So when I saw this, this is a little bit like that ink in mail thing where I was like, don't we already do this? I thought this was already a thing, but they've kind of put it across the mobile ecosystem. So you'll see the little camera button in Edge in on the home, you know, the home tab. You'll see it in the Microsoft launcher in the search bar. And this goes back. They had this in Windows Phone. This was like, I think it was called Bing Visual Search. Oh. But the idea is
I thought this was there too. I was surprised seeing this blog post too. I was like, wait, isn't that already there?
Yeah.
That's so Microsoft. Have a blog post about something nobody is there, but nobody knows about.
They just did that this week with the Microsoft IntelliMouse Explorer they brought back. They had a big blog post as if it had just come out, and
that's hysterical.
Brad and Hedy and I kind of wrote each other. I said, "Didn't this happen like 3 months ago?" And that we kind of looked it up, and it was like, "Yeah, this is all it was an excuse to interview one of the guys that helped design it, which would have been a great topic, you know, just describe it as behind the scenes with the guy who designed the mouse." But they made it look like it was a new announcement, like this had just happened. In case you missed it,
I have like 8 of them in a bag in my closet because I just want to have, you know, when one dies, I want to be ready to go.
I did that with keyboards.
Yeah. Well, that's your most important tool.
I burned through them. I just toss it out the window and grab the next one.
Actually, I don't use the Explorer because that's one is not ambidextrous.
Right.
I use the old IntelliMouse, which could go left or right because I'm a lefty. Would you like to take a break and then we will get to the back of the book? Would you like that? Would you?
Let's take a break.
Okay. Go get some almond milk. It's all gone.
And I'm going to talk about LastPass, our fine sponsor. And more than a sponsor, I feel like LastPass is a member of the family. We interviewed Joe Segrist many moons ago on Security Now. In fact, Steve Gibson uses LastPass because he, you know, I've been selling LastPass forever, not as an advertiser, but just because I think everybody ought to use a password manager, and it's my favorite. And so Steve got Joe to actually show him the source code and everything, look behind the veil. And he gave it his thumbs up and still uses it. I've been using it since practically they started. I remember when Joe started the company. It's my, and I've used every password vault, but this one is better. It's easier to use. It's actually the first program I install when I get a new phone because it'll help me set up the entire phone experience. On Android, you can actually use the LastPass browser to log into all the sites you need, you know, boom, 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 real fast, then switch back. They have their own browser, which is kind of cool. Then switch back to whichever browser you want to use. Of course, they have autofill that makes it easy to automatically fill in passwords, not just on websites, but on apps as you install them. iOS, same thing. They use a share sheet to get to LastPass in iOS. That's the best way to do it, and it really works great. Just fills in those passwords for you. And I'll tell you why you want that. Because you don't want to have to remember passwords. You want passwords that are, frankly, unmemorable. Long, strong, random passwords. LastPass will not only generate them for you, they'll remember it and actually fill it in for you. That's true security. LastPass extends to the business as well. LastPass Enterprise, we use it here. We started using it when Engineer posted all his passwords on the public web because he couldn't remember them. That's when we bought LastPass and said, everybody, not only do we use LastPass Enterprise, but everybody here gets LastPass Personal as well as a benefit of employee because I want them to secure their passwords. That's good for everybody. LastPass Enterprise lets you set all the policies you want. We require two-factor. You can automatically reset passwords if you need. If somebody leaves the enterprise, they lose control of those passwords, as they should. You make sure that only the people who need to know the passwords have access to them. You can even set it so they can't see the passwords or modify them. They could just use them. There's all sorts of features every enterprise should have. And for end users, it's great, too, because you can designate an emergency access contact. My daughter and my wife are my emergency access contacts. If I should become incapacitated, they can get access to my vault. But there, you know, there's like a dead man switch. If they have to ask access and then LastPass sends me an email, and if I don't respond, and I can set how long, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4 days, a week, a month, if I don't respond in that time, then they get access. This is the kind of thing LastPass has thought out so many important details. Family sharing. Sharing at work, same thing. The ability to share a password with an employee as needed and revoke it as needed. And, of course, everything they do, encrypted, strong encryption, AES 256, everywhere. So your password vault is visible only to you, and that's what you want. LastPass simplifies password management for companies of any size with the tools you need to secure your business while centralizing control of employee passwords and apps. I want you to try it. We believe in it. And I've been using it for years. LastPass Premium for personal use. LastPass Families if you want to get the whole family involved. LastPass Teams for teams of 50 or less. At work and at home, fix your password woes with LastPass, the number one most preferred password manager. Learn more at LastPass.com/twit. 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 You need it. You should have it. Now to the back of the book we go. Paul Thurrott. And his
by the way, breaking news.
Breaking news.
Apple and Samsung have settled their 7-year-old patent infringement lawsuit.
How much did that cost Samsung?
There are no details.
Yeah, they probably said, look, we'll cut you a deal. Instead of $500 million, let's make it $750 million or something. It's interesting. I'll check that out.
Yeah. I'm kind of surprised by that.
Well, you know, it's been coming. It's been coming. I wonder if I'm sure all the money went one way.
So you might have seen this story this past week where I think it was in the New York Times. People are using smart home technology to terrorize people, right? So you're familiar with like stalkers. You're going after like an ex-girlfriend or an ex-wife or something, and you kind of harass them in some terrible way. One of the new terrible ways you can harass them is to turn on and off their smart lights, have music blur out of a smart speaker at 3 o'clock in the morning. Like, there's all this crazy kind of stuff that's possible because of this, you know, smart home technology. And how can you protect yourself against that kind of thing? And separate to that, that was kind of interesting. It's a good example of something that would never have occurred to me. And I love to antagonize people, but I, changing. Oh, well, actually, I shouldn't say that. I did break into my friend's Sonos application so I could change a playlist he was using. But anyway, I'm not super malicious, but you know, I've been doing some smart home stuff here in the new house, which is increasingly just the house, not really the new house. But I've run into a real weird set of issues with reliability and cost. Spousal acceptance isn't the right term, but the inability of anyone in my family to understand how anything works, which is actually a really serious issue, not with the people, but with the products themselves. And I think I told the story about how my wife would not turn off the one light in the living room because she knew it was attached to like a Philips Hue thing and she didn't want to screw it up, you know. And I sort of sat back and I wrote an article about this, but the gist of it was, if you kind of consider like any given room in a home and like what could I do to make this room smart? Like, what are the things I could do? There are lights. Maybe there's locks and shades. There's, power receptacles you could attach things to. There's light switches on the wall, you know, whatever. And, you know, I think, you know, more often than not, at least in my case, like the smartest thing to do is just to leave it alone, you know. There's something really simple about a light switch that has like an on and off thing, and that's it. You know, it's just on and off. It just goes on and off. And it's interesting because since writing this, the article I wrote about, I talked about two of this kind of smart plugs. And a smart plug is something like this. I don't know if this is a great example, but it's just like a box. You plug it into the wall, then you plug a thing into it, and this thing has Wi-Fi in it, and you can connect to it with an app, or you can connect to it through your Google Assistant or your Amazon Echo or whatever, and control it with your voice, which is a really ponderous way to turn on a light, by the way, or to do a set of things. And I think when it comes to the smart home stuff, I think what's becoming obvious to me, this may be obvious to a lot of people, but is you really need to evaluate this stuff ahead of time. And I would take baby steps before.
Most
I would
of it
go,
is crap. Go ahead, say it. You know what you're thinking.
Most of it's unnecessary.
Yeah.
You know, I think especially people who are like tech enthusiasts,
makes you nuts.
We tend to confuse the process for the end result. Mm-hmm. You know, that just playing with it is the point, and that's not the point. It's our house. I want lights to come on, or I want, you know, heat to come on, or whatever it might be. There are things that we like. It's funny. A lot of the stuff that we like that kind of falls into the smart home category is just automated things, like outdoor lights that come on at a certain time, or we have ambient lights inside that are Philips Hue colored lights. We have those Bloom things in the corners. Like, those things are pleasant. They don't get in the way. Like, they don't, you know, they don't change anything. Like, they're just kind of there. They're nice. But I have enough experience with technology, and it would be all do here, to know that these things fail. I'm not sure I want the locks to my house to fail, or the lights to come on in the middle of the night, or, you know, I've even done goofy things like in the Philips Hue app where my daughter has smart lights in her room and she likes them. She plays around with the colors and things. And I'm downstairs and I went to turn off that light that my wife won't touch, but I hit the wrong room and Kelly's lights all came on in the middle, you know, at 11 o'clock at night, and she had been asleep for an hour and a half or whatever. I realized the mistake immediately. Yep. And I flicked them back off. I don't even know if she noticed, to be honest, but what if I hadn't noticed? You know, I could have turned all her lights on and gone to bed, and she would have woken up in the middle of the night with all the lights on full blast. I mean, that's scary and weird. So anyway, there's not a specific tip, but I will continue writing about this stuff. I'm interested in it. But I think one of the key takeaways from my experience so far over the past almost a year now is that most of this stuff is just more complication than it is solution.
Yeah.
In my experience.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I agree. I'm sure Mary Jo does as well.
Yeah. I don't do almost anything with smart home. Yeah. I just don't think it's something that's ready for a normal person like me.
It's more often a disappointment. Well, you heard me try to get my Google Home to.
Yeah.
It's more often a disappointment than it is.
I mean, that's all I have is the Harman Kardon speaker, and I haven't really hooked it up to anything real.
I have these small successes. Like the lights, some of the ambient light stuff is good.
Yeah.
I have a Harman, not Harman Kardon, what do you call this? Harmony smart remote. And it controls the things that are related to my TV. So I have like a Roku, an Apple TV, and then like a Chromecast or whatever. And I can switch between those inputs, turn everything on at once, switch, you know, turn everything off at once and stuff. And being able to use like a single remote, especially one that's better than the Apple TV remote, is actually really nice. Like it's just a $70 remote. It's wonderful. And then I have these little, like the smart plug thing I was just showing you, and plus another type of smart plug. Both of these things just stopped working in the past week. And, you know, again, my wife comes up and she says that IKEA lamp that's in the living room won't turn on. What's going on? It's something I did. Sorry. You know, yep. So I said, well, see the thing between the plug and the wall? I said, just detach that from the scheme.
Plug it back into the wall.
Notice that it will just start working.
It's a magic.
If you go in my living room, you'll see a little smart plug sitting on the wall, on the floor, as a tiny version of like exercise equipment, like things people buy and then stop using. I'm trying.
Yep. All the convenience of a conveyor belt and all the reliability of a personal computer.
Yep.
All right, let me try it now. Okay, Google.
Home something went wrong.
Oh, by the way, there's a Google Home outage.
Oh, is there?
Yes, there is.
That's what's going on?
Yeah. Sorry. I didn't connect that until just now.
It's out everywhere?
Well, it's not for everybody, but some people are experiencing... I saw it on Twitter. Somebody, Google tweeted about it or whatever, because they can't communicate over their home devices. No. They're broken.
Wouldn't it be funny if it woke up and every household said, just so you know, I'm out.
Yes.
I'm not working.
I can't connect to the internet. Help me.
Help me.
We're sorry to hear some of our users are experiencing issues with their Google Home and Chromecast. We're on it. Stay tuned for updates.
We're on it.
I love this. Okay, Google.
Sorry, something went wrong. Try again.
Oh, really? Oh, now I got to do it.
Here's
that's from
results.
Your phone.
The first is from Google.
Okay, Google. Yeah, I'm getting it out there. I can hear the little Google. Yeah. Something
went wrong.
Sorry, I can't handle that.
We
right
are aware
now.
Of the issue and working towards a resolution. Thank you very much.
Slack was down a good part of the morning, too. It's like, what's going on out there?
You forget when you do the IoT stuff that you're basically adding the reliability of a computer to
pretty much
what is normally, you know, you flip a switch and it works.
The most reliable thing in the world, exactly.
Mm-hmm. So, in what way is that a net gain?
Well, right.
Pick of the week.
This happened last week, but Microsoft released a new version of what used to be called MSN News, and they're calling it Microsoft News. So as you can tell, it's completely different. And the reason I mention this now is because I had been using Google News as kind of a news aggregation app. They completely changed Google News recently, and I find it to be completely worthless. And on the web and in mobile, I hate this app. And it caused me to go out and start looking around and seeing what else was out there. I found something called, I just forgot the name of it. I think it's called Smart News. It's worth looking at. This is a mobile app. It's on Android and iOS. It's interesting. The thing I like about it is most but not all articles, when you click into an article, you can slide over and it will go to what they call Smart View. It's a reading view. So it gets rid of all the ads and everything. That's actually pretty cool. You don't get it everywhere. But the thing I always liked about MSN News is just how kind of bland it was. It was just news. Like, it's not a lot of nonsense news, you know. And with the new version, they give you the opportunity to go and just kind of pick the topics you want to see up on the tab. And so they have, you know, they have like stuff like good news and crime news and, you know, whatever. But they have all the, you know, world, U.S., whatever. And I got to say, I've gone back to using it again. It's interesting because I switched to Google News at some point, I don't know, a year or two ago. And because they completely ruined the app, it's weird that they just updated it, Microsoft. And seeing it again and seeing it in slightly improved form like it is today, it's like, yes, this is what I want from a news app. Like, I just want the news. You know, this stupid ads, you know, you're never going to believe what Lonnie Anderson looks like today. She's 92 or whatever.
I know.
And it's just one of those, you know, those stupid things you flip through, like pictures of people before and after.
Yeah, I hate that stuff.
That stuff's in there. You know, they have to support it somehow. But I no one would ever pay for this, but I would give anything to be able to pay for this thing and not have ads. I'd love to have a thing like that. But, cool. It's a good news app.
Mary Jo Foley it's time for your Enterprise Pick of the Week.
I'm recommending a podcast for my Enterprise Pick of the Week.
Ooh, how exciting.
This is new from Microsoft. It's called Behind the Tech. And they're just starting this up now, but it's going to be a podcast series anchored by Microsoft CTO Kevin Scott, who came to Microsoft through LinkedIn. And he's interviewing people who are kind of like the famous big brains of the company. That's going to be the take of this. So the first show he did was him interviewing Anders Heilsberg.
Wow.
And they're going to have a whole bunch of the probably like tech fellows. I bet Mark Rusinovich will be on and Jeffrey Snover and all the big names.
Be great.
It's going to be really good. So if you want to find this, it's behindthetech.libsynpro.com.
You could probably Google Behind the Tech with Kevin
Scott.
Oh, yeah,
you probably could. Yeah. Yeah. Because it's on all the podcast networks are coming to them all soon.
Yeah. Libsyn Pro is a very popular podcast platform. I'm kind of surprised Microsoft's not doing this
on Channel 9 or something.
It's odd.
Me too. I'm surprised as well.
But this is that makes this like a real podcast, like, you know.
It does.
Which I like. Yep. Yeah. Good for them.
Yeah.
Good for
them. So it should be a good one to listen to if you're into kind of the luminaries in the industry who work at Microsoft.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yep.
Very cool. And your enterprise. Oh, that was your enterprise pick of the week. How about.
Well, I'm doing two this week.
Oh, I see. There are two. Oh, good.
Okay. There are. So this Enterprise Pick 2 is about a new container-based image that's coming to the next version of Windows Server. So Microsoft dropped this hint a while ago, and they're like, you know what? We've got Nano Server. We've got Windows Server Core. But we're going to have another container image coming to Windows Server. And I call them, and I'm like, yeah, what is it? Well, we're not going to tell you. But today they told us. And what it is Windows, just plain Windows container image. Oh. And so if you are running today's Windows 10 Redstone 5 Insider Test Build, you can actually start trying this out now. You can actually run it there. If you want to find out more, check out Microsoft's blog post they did today about Redstone 5. And they have a link in there that takes you to their virtualization blog. And what they say on that blog is kind of interesting. They say, we know there are some apps that needed more components than we provide in Nano Server and Windows Server Core. And that's why, for backwards compatibility reasons, we're going to have a Windows image available here too. So that's interesting to people who care about containers. Speaking of Windows Server, this week, Microsoft had a big Windows Server Summit, which was a virtual conference, and they made all the sessions in it available to watch for free. So if you care about Windows Server, you want to know the roadmap, you want to know about containers, Kubernetes, Azure Stack, any of those topics, they've got quite a few sessions available for you to watch. Just the easiest way to find it is to just search for Windows Server Summit, and you'll come to the website with all the episodes lined up for your viewing pleasure.
Wow. I love it.
I know. It's a lot of content for free.
Yeah.
Yep.
Very handy.
Windows Server Summit was the name of the event.
But that was a triple pick.
It kind of was a triple pick. Yeah. You know, we had a lot of Xbox news this week.
So yeah, that was an anodyne refreshment. And speaking of refreshment, it's time for cake. I mean beer. Yeah. I mean cake.
It's a beer that tastes like frosting.
Yay!
Not even making this
Finally.
Up. It's like, I know. I had a sip of this and I'm like, wow. Okay, if you're in the mood for a dessert beer, this is your beer. It's called Grim Icing on the Cake. Grim is the name of the brewery, G-R-I-M-M. And think what chocolate frosting with like some vanilla in it tastes like. And that is what this beer tastes like.
It's frosting that gets you drunk.
Pretty much. 10%, you probably aren't going to drink a whole lot of it. Or if you are, you're not going to feel too good afterwards. but it's really, really tasty. You know, because sometimes you get these imperial stouts and they're more bitter and roasty than they are sweet. But some people love the sweet. And this is for you. Grim Icing on the Cake. And the reason I made it the pick this week is Grim, for anyone who's going to be in New York City this weekend, they're finally opening their tap room. And these guys are like a cult brewery in New York, and their tap room's in Brooklyn, and they're having a big party with like all kinds of beer and food and all that. So if you're into Grimm, you should go to their launch party Saturday.
Nice.
You might see me there. I might be there.
A little more Mary Jo stalking.
Yes.
Wow, that's it. We completed that's the show.
There was more
time
to talk about than we thought. Yeah. Because this morning we were pretty worried about what we were going to talk about.
I think we did a really good job of taking 17 minutes of content and dragging it out to like 2 hours.
I think we did. Quiet. No, you know, it was funny. Today, a lot of stuff happened. Yeah. I mean, think about all the data lake stuff alone.
Alone. alone.
Then there was almond milk and, you know.
Yeah. We had a few little data lake. Yeah. And now I'm, by the way, I'm comatose. So,
from all that heavy cream.
From all the heavy cream and pizza.
You fool.
And biscotti.
Because pizza swimming in the heavy cream.
We do Windows Weekly every Wednesday, around about 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 1800 UTC. I want you to come by and watch us live. If you do, visit the chat room, irc.twit.tv. Those are a great bunch of people watching the show along with you. And if you can't watch live, you can always watch on demand. We have all the shows, all 576 of them, available at twit.tv/WW. And if you want to listen on an ongoing basis, if you subscribe, that's the best way to do it. You'll get the show the minute it drops every Wednesday. And every podcast application, Pocket Casts, Overcast, Google's new podcasts app, iTunes, every podcast app has it because it's the greatest Windows show in history. And I say that with no prejudice whatsoever. Paul Thurrott is at Thurrott.com, thurrowgood.com. His books are at leanpub.com. Mary Jo Foley is at allaboutmicrosoft.com. And I hope you have a wonderful summer week. Enjoy yourselves. Stay cool. And we will enjoy the Grim Brewery tap room.
Thank you.
And we'll see you next week on Windows Weekly.
Bye-bye. I don't think you will see us next week.
I won't. Oh, it's the 4th of July. Holy cow. America's birthday.
What happens?
I don't know. We'll be eating cake.
We'll
you're
be
right.
Drinking
There's
our
no
cake.
Show next week. Oh, I'm so glad you noticed that.
I did. I was like, wait, next week is 4th of July.
The 4th really creeped up on me this year.
I know, me too.
Yeah, I don't think I would have ever thought of this.
Yeah.
I would have been sitting here next Wednesday wondering where everyone was.
Well, we're not no one's coming in, so no shows next Wednesday. We'll take the day off, but we'll be back. And so 2 weeks from now, I'll see you.
Yeah. Yep.
How did we get to July so fast?
I know, really.
It's time for the All-Star break.
Yep.
Thank you, everybody. We'll see you next time, 2 weeks hence, on July 11th for Windows Weekly. Bye-bye.